Just watch me love myself. That's all I want. Got what I want. That's all I want. I'm not sorry.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
And this is Love to See It, an obsessively detailed recap podcast about The Bachelor and other pop culture that makes us laugh, cry, and curse the patriarchy.
We can't live with these shows, and we can't live without them, but we can break down every juicy moment and unpack all the weird messages these shows send us about love, sex, and dating. Can you keep up?
I like love it. Welcome to Love to See It with Emma and Claire, a podcast about labor organizing in the entertainment industry.
You know, it's so difficult to unionize the Bachelorette contestants because of high turnover and the fact that they, you know, aren't technically employees, but solidarity finds a way. And last night, not for the first time and hopefully not for the last, the show's contestants tried to come together as one unit to meet management at the bargaining table.
It was a beautiful moment for unions, but also a brief one. So today we will chart the rise and fall of this Bachelorette union, which quickly fell apart once the men were made aware that they couldn't negotiate to each have a full Katie for themselves.
Look, these are just the struggles we encounter while organizing for labor rights. And it's a dog-eat-dog world out there. But today we're joined by some great guests. We have the wonderful Charlene Joint and Andy Levine. Charlene's an old friend of the pod. You all know her, as well as a Bachelor alum, blogger, and opera singer. And Charlene's husband, Andy, may be new to the pod, but not to our hearts. He gives some A-plus relationship advice alongside Charlene on their fantastic podcast, Dear Shandy.
Thank
wow,
you, guys.
So kind.
Yeah, what a nice intro. Thank you,
thank you
guys.
For having us.
Oh, thank you for being with us. We love your podcast. We love you guys.
We love your podcast. This is going to be fun. I think I texted Charlene last night and was like, I'm so sorry you guys have to talk about this very heavy episode twice, but also I'm really grateful we're having you guys on.
Yeah, the more the merrier when tackling an episode
solidarity.
Like this.
Exactly. Yeah, we're unionizing right now is what we're trying to say.
Podcast union forming.
Yeah.
But before we get into the recap, Emma and I just wanted to take a moment to address something that we messed up last week and make a little correction. We made a couple jokes about the Grand Hyatt Tamaya where they are filming this season, suggesting that the decor was culturally appropriated. And that was sort of a mistake.
Yeah, we didn't realize, and we're super grateful to a few listeners for pointing it out to us. The resort, which is located on reservation lands in the Santa Ana Pueblo, is actually run by the Tamaya people, the tribe which is indigenous to those lands. So that's pretty awesome. And we stepped in it with our unresearched jokes last week. So it was definitely a lesson for us, and we're grateful to everyone who brought this mistake to our attention.
Yeah, so we're glad that the show is bringing some light to the resort, to the reservation lands. That said, you know, the show doesn't have the best history with depicting cultures other than like super white bread American. And we haven't actually really, I think, seen any overt acknowledgement of the Tamaya people or culture on the show, aside from it being, of course, a really beautiful backdrop for dates about cowboys, and certainly, you know, making it seem very appealing to me as a vacation spot. But we hope that will change as the season goes on, and maybe we'll see some more acknowledgement of the people who are hosting this show. Yeah. And meanwhile, we totally encourage everyone to do what we failed to do last week, learn more about the Tamaya people and their lands. We will have a couple links in the show notes.
Also, we just wanted to say that we are not going to be discussing the big Rachel Lindsay essay in Vulture. We did read it. We have a lot of thoughts about it. And we're actually going to be recording a separate podcast to address that. But it was just too much to tack on to the beginning of this already very full recap. So on that note, did everyone remember that we actually ended on a cliffhanger last week? Because I had fully forgotten. But like, they are mid-fight with Carl when we open.
That seems to be the trend now. I mean, when don't we end with a cliffhanger these days? I miss the days where we ended with a rose ceremony.
You can't see my quotes, but there are quotes here over cliffhanger. I see. You guys can see it.
Yes. You mean it's not like a really strong narrative device? Like
you weren't desperate to learn more at the end of last episode? It's hardly even a cliffhanger.
Scared. I mean, a cliffhanger is literally you're hanging off a cliff. I was scared. I went to bed scared all week. I've been uncomfortable.
You were like, I'm scared that I, in fact, have to spend more of my lifetime thinking about Carl and this argument. I'm scared.
Which they did, by the way. The whole first 10 minutes, I feel like, were dedicated right back to the exact same spot where mm-hmm. we left off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a Carl-heavy episode. I guess we're not the only people who tend to forget what happened on the last week of The Bachelorette as soon as the episode is over. So they do have to spend a lot of time catching us up. A little reminder, Carl is not 100% sure that 100% of the men there are there for 100% the right reasons. And everyone else is like, okay, so why do you keep implying that you definitely 100% know that a specific person or persons is definitely here for the wrong reasons? And
it's he's going out on a limb. I mean, the guy is really out there. Impressive.
And then he doubles down. Like, he does this thing where he's like, I mean, you said it, bro. I don't know. Oh, wow. People are getting upset. I get, who can say?
He's alternating straight denial with completely doubling down. Like, he's like, I'm not putting anyone on blast. I didn't throw a grenade. I didn't do anything. But you know what? I don't know. I think I want that guy to come to me directly, the guy I'm thinking of, the specific guy. It's like, so you aren't putting anyone on blast, or you definitely do have specific information that you are trying to surface right now. He can't pick a story. So
it's metaphysical. He's really getting into the meta world.
Exactly.
He's getting to the ontological type questions, right? Like, how do we know what we know?
Anyone.
From where does knowledge derive? I haven't taken a philosophy class in a long time, but like, I think he's getting somewhere pretty deep with this.
Yeah, it's really like Schrodinger's principle. I don't know if you know about that. I'm sure these girls know about Schrodinger.
Yeah.
So I can't say Schrodinger's.
We're sticklers for pronunciation here, so. So as this is all continuing, Katie finally comes out looking extremely grim and is like, I can't give any more energy or attention to this cocktail party, so we're just going to the rose ceremony. She leaves again. Greg, of course, is sent after her by production or the urgings of his own heart, who can say, and finds Katie crying. She's like, I don't need this insecurity being planted in my heart. And Greg is like, yeah, Carl should just come to us as men if there's a problem and not put that on you. And she's like, thank you. This is counter to her own pro-narc policy, but I'm sure it sounds very appealing at this particular moment to have them just work it out in the house.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm glad you mentioned that, because she did invite them to say anything to her. And that was honestly the only thing Katie has done so far this season that I wasn't like, that I wasn't completely in agreement with.
I agree. Yeah. I think she's doing overall like a great job, and I'm enjoying the season. But it is funny to see like her attempt at inviting like genuine tattles just completely like turn on her. Like she's just left like a crying mess.
Yeah, within true moments, like, or maybe let's say an hour or two.
Yeah, almost immediately.
Yeah.
She should have specified more, like, really well-founded snitches only. Like, don't come
like,
at me.
You must have at least 3 specific pieces of evidence.
Instead of zero.
Present. Yeah, instead of zero and, like, vague claims that you won't even explain to me who you are narking to.
To me, when Katie canceled this rose ceremony, it was abundantly clear that Carl was not convinced, but maybe nudged in the direction of telling her what he told her in the first place.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if production was like, hey, man, if you're feeling uncertain, you should really, like, she asked you.
Yes.
You should really tell it to her.
Yeah.
Although we do see him like working himself up to it in the group a little bit before, if you remember him being like, I don't know, guys, looking around, do you feel like everyone's here for the right reasons? So clearly he was pinned as the easiest one to coax into this.
No, I was going to say, it's such an interesting sociological experiment. You have 27 guys. It's 27, right?
Less now, but sorry, fewer now. Sorry, excuse me.
And
but still many men, yes.
But it's all like a blank slate. It's just 27 people with Y chromosomes. And then suddenly the producers are like, that's our guy. That's our Carl. The Carl comes out of like
he rises to the surface, rises. like the cream.
Yeah. It's so Look, fascinating.
He presents himself as the man for the moment.
Yes. Yeah. They're like, you're our guy. Yes. We mm-hmm. see what you can do, and we will encourage you to blossom. In
Look
this
at
role.
How Carl reacts to this moment where all the men are furious with him. You can tell he's the right man for this moment. What he does, instead of quavering or apologizing, is he retreats to another room, takes off his jacket, and begins to shadow box at the walls.
You have to take off your jacket. You can't properly get into the full motions of those punches.
It's true. Yeah.
If your arms are restricted at
Absolutely.
All.
Absolutely.
Andy was impressed, by the way, with his shadow boxing.
Yeah, it was good work. He's been in the
okay.
gym.
Okay, that's good to know. maybe he would be a good partner after all. Yes. That's what I look for.
Yeah, Katie's made an error. Oh my God, someone DM Carl.
He's got those bare knuckle brawl moves. Yes. So he's like shadow boxing. He's like, step up and be a man. I'm not here for these guys. Like, come at me, bro. And he's like, the ones who are just yelling and denying, they have the most to hide. So deep down, he really still believes. He's like hit dogs out there hollering, basically.
Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, Mike is like, it's time to unionize. He's like, we have a queen bee to protect.
Which is what unions are for.
In her colony. That's actually what unions are for. You just,
it's a bit of a mixed
just, like, protect the most powerful person. That's what, yeah.
The union must rise up in defense of the boss.
Yeah, like you unionize and then you're like pro Jeff Bezos, right? You're like, we must protect him.
Someone is trying to manipulate Jeff Bezos when he is at his most vulnerable, and we simply won't stand for
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So,
oh my God, you guys are on fire this morning.
Oh yeah. My God.
You're mixing your metaphors brilliantly.
Well, it's we really went in on this union metaphor, and then we were like, wait a second. Katie is the boss. Katie, though, wants to trust Carl. She's like, I love snitches, so that's a mark in his favor. Seems like a nice guy. Sure. I do want a husband who would be looking out for me. Hard to argue with that. She asked them all to be her eyes and ears in the house. So she's like, I can't say all of that and then immediately send Carl home for coming to me with his concerns about the house, right? She's like, I want to believe Carl. I want to be on the snitch side. And Carl, you know, having responded to her direct invitation by doing this, clearly feels like he's in a very solid position, even though the other guys now hate him. So it's time for the rose ceremony. She gets through four roses: David, Hunter, Connor C., and Mike P. And Mike P. is both the organizer and the voice of the union. He accepts the rose and then he says, this isn't something we want to do right now because of what you've gone through, but we feel as a unit that it's our job to protect your heart. We've come together in solidarity that we think that unfortunately what Carl said wasn't the truth. As a unit, that's what we feel you need to hear.
I mean, he's really using the language of labor organizing. He's like, mm-hmm. we're in solidarity, mm-hmm. we're a unit, we're a collective here. Like,
yeah, he's the Jimmy Hoffa of The Bachelorette.
And Katie thanks him. And as he steps back, she says, do you all feel the same way? It's a very Mean Girls, have you ever been personally victimized by Carl moment. Mm-hmm. And the men all... They have been personally victimized by Carl. And at this, she has to take a break. Like, what is going on? She has to go consult with her wing women, Tayshia and Caitlin. And she's like, I was planning to keep Carl. And now I'm just like, can I keep Carl? After all of the guys were like, we hate Carl. And Caitlin's like, it's not up to them.
Caitlin's like, it's not a chirocracy. Okay.
It's a dictatorship.
It's a cheer-tatorship.
So I have a question for all three of you, because I didn't quite get this. Do you think that Katie actually did like Carl enough to keep him? Or was she just like, I should keep Carl because it would make the show better?
My theory is that Katie is sort of like whatever about Carl, but yes, that she did not want to send him home after he had just kind of like done what she asked, mm-hmm, by
seeming to bring
information to her, that she was like, clearly doesn't feel that strongly about Carl. I think if she were super into him, she would have kept him. But I also don't think she really wanted to send him home per se. So, she was just like, he's one of my snitch guys. Like, I should keep him.
And to be fair, she was going to keep a bunch of guys from this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I always look at this from like the producer production angle too, but I do think that probably 70 to 80% of her planning to keep him was producer influenced, mm-hmm, because he would be another week of drama.
Right.
I think we all know what that rose ceremony would have looked like and what the next episode would have looked like had Mike P not done this.
I think as you guys kind of alluded to, is a little bit of betrayal. Probably she felt like she was betraying Carl.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like she had sort of asked for this. I also wonder if production ultimately kind of gave her the green light to send him home because they figured, like, we've sort of juiced what we can out of this. Like, he's peaked. All of the other men are vehemently opposed to him. And, like, look, we have these other, like, number two villains that are just waiting in the wings. That
far
we can
superior.
Subtler villains.
Subtler villains. No. Well, this is the thing, right?
Like, he's a classic early villain.
Right. They have to balance between getting the drama out of him and ruining her season with out of control drama that is a huge distraction for her, or that turns the audience against her because it seems like she can't handle it. Like, and Katie's got to know that. Like, there's a difference between wanting your season to be interesting because there's stuff going on, but also not wanting it to be dominated by this huge feud in the house.
But also dominated by someone who doesn't seem to have any romantic chemistry with the lead. It's not that interesting.
Right. It's not worth it. Like, if she were super into him, I'm sure he would have stayed. Mm-hmm. But do we really see Katie and Carl together? Like,
no.
Andy's questions are so sweet. This is the first time he's watching an entire season, by the way.
Oh,
Charlene, by the way, is gingerly stroking my arm. as if I'm drowning, man.
Not patronizing at all.
Oh, you sweet, sweet bachelorette.
I'm on my deathbed. She's just like, it's okay. It's okay. You can go.
You're bringing that like childlike insight, you know, the new fresh eyes that we're all so jaded by this show.
He really does do that. He said something in our recap of this episode where he called something heavy-handed, and I was like, yes, it is heavy-handed. Like, I kind of lost sight of just how heavy-handed everything is.
Yeah, because you're just like, that's just the vocabulary of the show.
Yeah, you're like, it's all heavy-handed, so we don't even, like, acknowledge that it's heavy-handed.
Exactly. Right.
Within the world of heavy-handedness, there are things that are even more heavy-handed.
Yes.
It's true.
So, meanwhile, the men are all really concerned that they're going to lose out on a rose because of Carl. Carl's feeling very confident. He's like, Katie and I are good. I'm getting a rose. I'm not. And you know what? I'm not leaving. You're going to have to get the military to come drive me out. I'm not going to go, which is what you want to hear from a guy you're dating. But Katie returns and it's back
while
to the
roses.
While
he's shadow boxing.
Yeah, exactly. All extremely comforting, positive signs about future partnership. It's just how you want someone to be handling conflict resolution and anxiety.
And when Katie returns, she begins to hand out roses again. Michael, Connor B, Courtney, Trey, Justin, Andrew M, Christian, Josh, Brendan, James. And now we're down to the final rose. And it goes to Aaron, which means that going home are Kyle, John, Carl, and Garrett.
Goodbye, sweet John.
at this point, they're saying their goodbyes. What did you guys think of this? Carl is shown kind of standing separate from the group with his back to Katie and then walking out without apparently speaking to her. Do we think that's actually what happened? Like, and there wasn't a continuous shot. Like, I'm sure he could have hugged her at some point.
Yeah, I bought this in terms of editing because of Katie's reaction at when the door slammed behind him. There was a moment where you saw her kind of like even steel herself as the door slammed. And to me, that was not the expression or body language of someone who had the closure of a goodbye in that moment. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
I completely agree. Like,
it was the face of betrayal.
Yeah, her reaction seemed continuous from throughout all the cuts, which was looking very steeled. Yeah.
I imagine the reason it wasn't shown in one continuous flow was more likely because there were other cameras in frame.
Mm.
But yeah. I bought this. Maybe I shouldn't have, but I definitely bought that he did not say bye to her. It kind of tracked too. Yeah.
Classic motivational speaker.
He's like, no more of my free services for you. You will have to pay for my next speech.
God, I would pay never to hear one of Carl's motivational speeches.
Same.
Actually, think of how much money you could make from employees to not have to go to like speakers in the office, motivational speakers at corporate retreats. That's what I would pay money for that. That kind of brings this rose ceremony finally to a close. We move on to essentially this week's episode.
Oh, but T.O., sorry. Mm. What do you guys think of Mike P's move?
To been the guy to speak up?
Yeah, the union leader. Mm-hmm.
I think it was pretty savvy that the guys didn't want to deal with this level of conflict in the house.
I totally agree. Address it.
And to assemble a coalition of the willing is very different than, you know, just... like Carl did, just charging in there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I thought it was smart.
They did it collectively. I thought it was a good move.
And the execution was great, too.
Yeah, the execution was great. He also didn't just speak for himself. He made sure to like make it clear that it was something that they had all talked about and were actually all in agreement about, other than Carl, and obviously. And yeah, I just thought the delivery was good. And he didn't actually say... Carl needs to go home. We don't want him here. Mm-hmm. He said, we want you to know that as a collective, we are all in agreement that what he said to you was untrue.
Yes.
And Katie took that and was like, well, then I should send him home, mm-hmm. which I think was the right move. But like, the way it was delivered was.
Oh, I loved it.
Very good.
I loved it, because I really do think that the execution really nailed it, because what he could have done was pulled her aside and been like, we all agree. But then it becomes another he said thing. It was in front of everyone. It was fantastic. He changed the course of the next episode based on that.
But also, I thought it was so smart.
But also the course of the franchise, because you will see this again.
It will not be executed as well. Like,
yeah, but Andy actually thinks that it could serve as sort of like, it could prevent a future behavior that could, you know, Carl-like behavior, because this can happen now.
And it will.
That's interesting.
Everything that happens in The Bachelor happens again.
Stupid. That is true. No, that is actually 100% accurate.
I think that's true. Like, I was really, as I watched it, I was like, can they just do this? Like, it's basically all the guys in the house being like, we don't want to deal with this shit. And they're, instead of just sort of being victims of it and getting drawn into like little side feuds, and which, I mean, they do on their own later without Carl, but like, instead of it just kind of becoming the figure around which all the conflict swirls, they can all just be like, we opt out of that. No, thank you.
It was super Gen Z. I felt a real Gen Z vibe about that whole thing.
Well, they are pretty young. They are a pretty young group.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we'll have more with Charlene and Andy.
And we're back. Before we dive back into the recap, we just wanted to give a quick trigger warning that in this section of the podcast, we will be discussing sexual assault in the context of Katie's discussion of it on the episode of The Bachelorette this week. Let's dive back in.
It's time for the first group date.
Yes, the first group date. I was like, where are we in this episode? They're just beginning the dates.
Yeah. Aaron, Courtney, James, Connor B., David, Justin, Thomas, Hunter, Brendan. Oh my God, all these names are just still blurring together for me. And the date card says, love is about honesty, and I need 100%. And there is no love, Katie.
Just a passive dot, dot, dot.
The men are like shaken to their core by the lack of love, Katie.
They are close reading punctuation like I did when I was reading my ex-boyfriend's texts. Like, how many dots are there at the end of this? How many times is the I repeated? It has to be exactly the right number or he's mad at me. You know, like, they know. They are that millennial Gen Z cusp age. They're used to close reading punctuation.
Mm-hmm. Ironically, also not using correct punctuation.
What do you mean?
No, I'm just saying there's a lot of not good punctuation in texting these days.
Oh, it doesn't. It's not good.
Yeah,
the punctuation isn't good. It is evocative.
There,
it's, mm-hmm. yeah, it's there to create a feeling rather than a grammatical structure.
And damn, did those ellipses work?
Oh yeah.
Oh man, just induce anxiety immediately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very foreboding.
It's like it's like another version of K.
Yeah.
Your heart drops.
Or a thumbs up to like something like really impactful that you get a good response.
Oh God. You're making me anxious just thinking about it.
Yeah. Just bringing all that energy that like scholars used to bring to reading Paradise Lost to just the dots at the end of your texts or date cards. That's what
like,
the 21st century is all about.
Honesty does Katie want? 100%?
So
the men, they get on their nice button downs. They go to meet Katie. Connor B. Claire, you wrote this in the notes.
The outfit.
And I also noted this. Why was his shirt unbuttoned?
Not just his shirt.
So much.
His shirts. He wore two button downs open to the navel on this date. Did you guys notice this?
We also noticed this.
Yeah, I have him flagged for worse dress.
And I like a good deep V, as you know. And I was offended by the deepness
this
of all
V
the
V's. Was too deep. It reminded me of like
the SNL sketch.
Oh, it reminded me. It was like very specific subset of like European men.
You know what I was thinking of? I was thinking like lounge singer meets figure skater.
Meets country singer.
Yes. That's accurate. Mm-hmm. Look, this is a style choice that spans several categories. Like none of them particularly positive in my experience.
Yeah. I like it. I like that we're analyzing his choice of shirt when he dressed as a cat.
Well, I did talk a lot about the cat costume.
I don't know. I was more disturbed by this than the cat.
In his nighttime outfit, you can see like several very delicate layered necklaces peeking out from behind. What I want to say though is I kind of love it. I mean, I wouldn't dress him that way if I were in charge, but like, he's just like, I'm not gonna wear the bachelor dude like from a catalog outfit. I have a look. It's very specific and I've committed to that.
Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. There's something to celebrate about that.
Absolutely.
For me. Why yeah. should men all have to dress the same, you know?
It helps that he's so likable too.
Yeah.
He's always, I love him.
You never know where Connor B is going. He's all over the place.
Oh, well, that is something I think that we'll get to talk about in a minute because we are about to move into the group therapy portion of this date, led by our good buddy, all of our good buddy, Nick,
yes.
who is just out here bringing his podcast to life on The Bachelor, on The Bachelorette. Did you feel that your territory was a little bit stepped on, Charlene and Andy? Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean.
Yeah, he really ran that group date with an iron fist. My God. I don't, yeah, and I don't know if I felt like our territory was being stepped on because he didn't really impart any advice. He just sort of
That's true.
Yeah.
He was just, it was like, more facilitator.
Yeah. Yeah, but man, he was very intimidating on what looked like the least fun group date in the history of this franchise. Yeah. Yeah.
I really expected there to be like a platter of donuts and coffee in the corner. Like it was very like support group aesthetic, dark room.
In our recap, we kept referring to it as the AA meeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It exactly. really looked that way.
Really? They were like, exactly, actually.
I mean, what's the difference? They just didn't say their name and then that they're an alcoholic. That was the only difference.
Yeah, it was it was basically anonymous for any crime you've ever committed.
Yeah, they kind
of.
I was
the heart.
I was waiting for
except
some
not
real,
anonymous.
Yeah, I was yeah. waiting for some real reveals. Like I thought someone was going to confess to a murder. I really thought that the Connor B story was headed towards a murder.
Oh, the Connor B.
Claire
story.
And I were convinced that it was going to like an extremely, extremely dark place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's why when should I say this?
What? You can say it.
I said, and I don't want, this shouldn't be offensive, but I said after his story, I just said, who cares? And not because it wasn't very impactful for him and his life, but the buildup didn't seem like it was just going to be a drunken hookup. Like it really felt like this was going to end with something tragic or yeah. horrific or something
yes.
that the law might have been.
It created a letdown.
I had the
sensation.
Same reaction.
Well, let's paint a picture.
Okay,
so they're in this circle of chairs doing their little meeting. Nick is like, I'm here to hold you guys accountable for the secrets you're keeping from Katie that she needs to know before she falls in love with you. Ghosting, cheating, wanting to be the next bachelor, all those similar things. And some of the guys share their stories. Let's start with Connor, since we already talked about it, and then we can touch on some of the others. Connor is very emotional. His is the confession we see last, actually. And he's like weeping. He says, you know, when I was around 24, 25, I dropped out of a PhD program. I was working as a full-time musician at a piano bar. And drinking for free.
He was the piano man.
I mean, that's pretty cool. I would have liked the story to end right there. Then I would have been more interested.
Yeah, you're like, that seems good enough. Good confession.
On most seasons of The Bachelor, that alone would be a confession. She'd be like, you were a pianist at a piano bar? Like, okay. You're not a country musician, so you can leave.
He's basically Ryan Gosling. Like, that's it. End of scene.
And he reveals that he was like an angry drunk. He would black out and just say horribly cruel things to his girlfriend at the time and his friends. So he's weeping. He's like, I was an angry drunk. I was blacking out. I didn't remember stuff that happened. And one night I got really drunk. I picked a fight with my girlfriend. I'm like covering my face with my hands at this point. I'm like, he's going to say that he put his girlfriend in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And instead he's like, I picked a fight with my girlfriend and then I went to another party and hooked up with someone else and I cheated on her. And
I like breathed a sigh of relief. I was like, obviously it's not like a good thing to cheat, but I fully was like, wow, he's going to admit to hitting his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Like that, like I fully thought that's where it was going. I was just like, you just cheated.
Oh, thank God. Thank God.
It's funny the power of buildup and just and even his level of emotion.
I got to
give
him credit.
We all thought that.
Yeah. He knows how to tell a great story with a terrible ending. Yeah, all he's got to do is work on his endings and he's a fantastic storyteller.
I think we were all really expecting that to go in a different direction.
For the context, I think it was the perfectly told story because if he just was like, "Yeah, once I got drunk and I like cheated on my girlfriend," it would seem like a really bad confession, I think, to a lot of women who are looking to commit to someone. But by building it up, like it might be something much worse, it makes it seem like, first of all, you're relieved that it's just cheating. Mm-hmm. Second of all, you're like, he really understands the gravity of cheating because he thinks it's the worst thing a person could ever do. He has like that's the worst thing that he's ever done or could imagine doing. And that's pretty comforting. So the other big conversation that we kind of see the whole confession for is Hunter. Hunter is the first to speak, and he talks about the relationship that his children are from. He says he met a woman, and she was the woman he knew he was going to spend his life with. They got married. They had a daughter. By the time they had their son, he says he had shifted priorities. He makes it sound like he was just working all the time, like, and he felt like he had to work so that they could have, so that his family could have everything they wanted. But it was, quote, catastrophically ironic because by being away all the time, focusing on other things, he was sort of destroying his relationship with his wife, and they got divorced. And he cries. He's like, I never imagined divorce for myself, and now it affects our two kids. And I know when I have a marriage again, I will really cherish it. So that's kind of, I think, the kind of conversation we would more likely typically have seen on a one-on-one. This episode kind of functions to speed up a lot of those conversations. It's like, if you have a big confession for Katie, don't save it for your one-on-one. Let's just do it
now.
Say
it to the group. It's like they almost just like glaze over the fact that Aaron says twice that his like father had a stroke, which seemed very traumatic. But they just sort of like intersperse a few little clips of him being like, my dad had a stroke.
Yeah.
It was a little odd. So yeah, we're kind of getting these like big emotional moments that then show up in sort of clip format with Katie's voiceover. And
I would be pissed, I think, if I were on that date and I was put in that position where I had to share something.
It was a lot.
And then something like that was just taken out of context and put in a montage.
It's I agree.
I don't even
get the full emotional weight of what you're saying.
Yeah, of the thing that you forced me to do in the first place. Like, at least when you have a one-on-one date, a producer's like, so what are you going to talk to Katie about? And then you know that you'll have the time and that more or less that will be shown, maybe condensed, but it will be shown more or less. But to put them in that situation and then to take any of it out of context and thrown into a montage was very icky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a little weird, like, it's a little notable that it's a pretty diverse date, but the only guys who actually get their full stories told are white. We just see like the barest moments of David and Courtney and Aaron.
Yeah, that's true.
Like
actually.
All the other guys. And Thomas, then, I guess we see most of what he says, but it's not really coherent. Like, he's basically just like, I'm not here for the right reasons, but now I'm super into
now
you.
Now I am.
And it's great.
I mean, you can make a case that he's the most noble because he was there for the wrong reasons and he's elevated to the right reasons, whereas most people are there probably for slightly the wrong reasons.
I think that's the argument he's trying to make, but unfortunately, he's just opened himself up because the key to being there for any of the wrong reasons, which obviously every single person who goes on this show is there for a handful of different reasons, some of which by the like law of the show would probably be considered the wrong ones. You're supposed to keep that to yourself. Say it. Do not say it out loud.
Thomas is the king of saying all the things you're not supposed to say, but then the rest of the time continuously BSing.
Right. It's wild how he will just like throw out this very honest, like for The Bachelorette, insanely honest thing.
Yes.
It's in a way, it's the one of the few like red flags that I think actually isn't a character flaw in any way. Like, it's, I don't think it's a bad thing to go on the show thinking at least this will be good for my platform. We'll see what happens. I don't think that's a character flaw, but it is the most taboo thing you can say on the show. And he will just throw that out there. And then everything else he says is so evasive and just like tailored to what she wants to hear.
Yeah. He also just speaks in word salad and it like drives me crazy.
It's funny that as Andy put in our recap, he was like, literally you could just put 50 words in a grab bag and it gives the same meaning.
He's an AI bot. He's just an AI bachelor bot.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Maybe he is. He's like one of those bots like on Twitter that just
we fed a different
like bachelorette phrase every day.
Yep.
Yeah. They're like, we fed a neural network like 15,000 hours of bachelorette one-on-one dates and this is the conversations that it has now. That's Thomas.
Yeah, it's about that level too. You'd actually, if you heard the bot saying what Thomas says, you'd be like, they could have done better. Probably didn't use a big enough server.
I'm gonna tweak that algorithm a little bit. You know, you just can't improve on a human still, you know, despite how far technology has advanced. So this kind of gets us through all the confessions, you know, those are the only real ones we hear in full, although there's a hint that like maybe Courtney was unfaithful in some way, Aaron handled a breakup poorly, you know, we don't really see. And then Katie gives her own confession.
Yeah. And she, you know, talks about how she's known as this kind of sex positive, confident woman. But she has not always, like, that version of herself has not always been there. And she says that 10 years ago on New Year's Eve, she was involved in a situation where she didn't give consent and she was sexually assaulted. And she says that she carried a lot of guilt and shame and wanted that to not have happened. So she actually tried to form a relationship with the man who had assaulted her. And
I just got goosebumps really, all over again, even just hearing you repeat that.
Yeah. I mean, it was a really powerful story that I think probably was hard to hear for a lot of viewers and probably felt relatable to a lot of viewers. And she, what I thought was really important about it is that she didn't just disclose this assault, but she also talked about kind of the long tail and the impact that this had on her and her relationships and her relationship specifically with sex for many years after, you know, this happened a decade ago. And I think that that's something that we haven't really ever heard talked about on the show. And it felt really, really important. And I think it also really contextualized the importance of sex positivity, which on the season has mostly been kind of used as this odd buzzword to catchphrase to be like, let's wave around a vibrator. But in fact, the reason that like sex positivity as sort of like a political movement exists is because like cultural shame and guilt around sex is incredibly damaging to people of all gender identities. And it impacts the way that people move through their sexual experiences, and doing away with that shame and that guilt is better for everyone.
Well said.
Very well said. What a powerful story. And she was so courageous to share this. And everyone kept emphasizing she didn't have to. And I'm glad they emphasized that, because she absolutely did not have to share this on this date at all, really. But I really, just how she went there with talking about how she did try to form a relationship. Like, I think that's probably so much more common than people imagine.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think a lot of people listening, their lives are better now because they're like, oh, that actually is a thing. It's not just me.
Yeah. And recognizing, even if I bet you out there, millions of people watch the show, someone has done that or is currently doing that.
Multiple people. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, as Andy said, when we watched it, he was like, she just single-handedly made the world a better place.
Yeah. I love that she clearly was prepared to talk about it like really eloquently, rather than being in a position where she felt like she was pressured or like had to just say
it. Or it was like her cue.
Yeah.
It's like, it's her cue
it
now.
Was very, very consciously
done. Make us look
done.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. And she even, she gave an interview that came out with the episode with Glamour, I think.
With Glamour.
Where she talked more about it. And she talked more in the episode about like how she felt like she was really in control of this confession. And that was like empowering for her, to let her feel like she was in charge and not the pain. And that's not always the case. You know, like when we see people doing these confessions on the show, even earlier in the episode, like we were saying, this very same date, it feels like the guys are put in a position where this is being kind of extracted from them and not necessarily respected. And Katie's story, conversely, is clearly something that she was emotionally prepared to do, mentally prepared to do in an eloquent and like healthy way that would help other people, and that she could kind of have ownership over. And that's, I think, the only way to do confessions like this on this show in a way that doesn't cause harm. And so I appreciated that she had that level of control over the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to note that some people did point out, which I think probably would have been a good idea. They probably should have offered some sort of trigger warning at the top of the episode or flashed the rain hotline both first. Before and after.
Yeah.
Because I think it was a jarring kind of pivot that people weren't necessarily prepared for. But otherwise, I thought it was handled really well. And I was glad to see that at the commercial break after she made that disclosure, they did put the rain hotline up there. And Katie also shared resources on her social media. And I think the Bachelor Nation account did as well. So I was glad to see like at least some effort was made there by the show and the network to put those resources out there.
And Katie, yeah, she just I don't think overstate how well she did to really kind of express why it's important to process these things and talk about them.
Yeah.
And why it's important to have good communication around sex and not have it wrapped up in guilt or pressure or expectation, but to have it be something that is openly communicated and consented to. So she really nailed it, I think.
She was amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it honestly read like, it read so, she's just so good at speaking and expressing how she feels.
Also so emotionally grounded.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, we agree on all fronts.
No, it was impressive and it was cool. And it was another, like watching that, I was like, oh, this is why obviously specifically in this situation, but like in general, like she is a good lead. She is someone who is capable of carrying the show and taking on really difficult conversations and engaging with them. And also like knowing how to talk about her own experiences in a way that communicates their weight and also doesn't like re-traumatize her. Mm-hmm. And that's huge.
Yeah. Yes. And she's 30, like she's an adult. Yeah. I just love having an adult as the lead, like a full, like brain too. Fully developed adult who's had the chance to like to work through some of these things in the way that certainly when I was 24 or 25, I had not either.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we'll have more with Charlene and Andy.
And we're back. So that brings us to the night date. We see some of their nighttime looks, as we discussed earlier. James, I just want to call out, also committing to a very specific look, continues to kind of severely comb his hair away from a side part with like a gallon of gel to plaster it all firmly to his scalp. This is not a look that I think has been in vogue for quite some time.
It's like the 30s gangster or the 20s gangster.
Yes.
It's his entire look.
That's his whole thing. The whole thing is 20s gangster.
I gotta say,
he's a bootlegger.
I'm living for James's style.
You love it.
Yeah. Do you guys not like it?
Should I start slicking my hair back? Should I like put like Vaseline in my hair?
You're like, this is actually what Charlene is into. Andy, you've been
taking notes. Taking notes.
It's his commitment.
More coming out of a box, more Vaseline
more
in my hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. James's commitment. His sartorial commitment is just, it's impressive.
Is it sartorial, though?
It is. Mm. It's the entire look. He doesn't skip any aspect.
Three-piece suits
with a double-breasted vest. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a mouthful. And just even the accessories, the tie clip, the hair. It's old-timey, and I'm into it.
Or it's a new-timey guy who owns a club in Miami. It's could be both.
He's bringing it back.
Either or, really.
He's bringing it back. I think, I mean, for me, I struggle to find the slick back hair appealing, just like on a gut level. I just don't like it. But I do appreciate the commitment. Similarly to Connor, I'm like, these guys aren't afraid to deviate from the mean style-wise. Mm-hmm. And I love that for men to embrace that more in our society. And in these one-on-one chats, the confessions continue to be kind of a major topic. Katie talks more about how liberating it was to share. The men all express that they want to open up more about themselves to her. We do not really get any new information about any of them. Just them saying, I want to tell you more about myself, which was a little irritating. So were there any moments that we specifically want to talk about before we get into the Thomas situation of
we
it
have
all?
To touch on Justin. Yeah. I mean, Justin is coming up from behind. I know it doesn't seem like it yet, but he got a lot of airtime in this mm-hmm. episode.
I was actually going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, I like Justin. Don't get me wrong. But
Andy
why?
Actually really likes Justin, by the way.
He's also really cute.
He's very cute.
He is.
He gives
and he
good
gives
reaction.
Great, good reactions. And great he's an face. Amazing
gives
great painter.
Face. He's great, mm-hmm. paints amazing roses.
We've seen it in action. So we know he's definitely doing it himself. Which I want to just call out. I love that they mm-hmm. show those mm-hmm. those full painting time
He's
lapses.
Like the Bob Ross of The Bachelorette.
But yeah, Justin, I felt like his one-on-one time, even though it was somewhat glossed over, it was the only time shown that wasn't really Thomas or Connor B. Or even Aaron's was just used basically to show Thomas pacing in the background. Mm-hmm. I just feel like that
Dark
was notable.
Dark horse Justin. We're going to see more of him.
Mm-hmm. He's one of those frustrating people where it does seem like she likes him and they might be connecting, but we don't really see enough of it. It's just like them sitting down and being like, let's get to know all about each other. And then they take a little cute selfie together and we move on. And I'm like, well, show me something that they learned about each other.
I have a feeling we're going to get a one-on-one with Justin.
I hope you're right.
Soon, definitely. And then we'll get to know him better. Like, this felt like they were signaling to us, like, start to pay attention to this person. We know there's a lot of dudes here still, but, like,
we hear from David as well, like, oh, yeah, I'm so ready to open up to Katie. We don't even, like, see them sit down. Later, she's like, David, you really stepped up today and opened up more to me. And I'm like, we saw zero of that.
Zero.
Like, about what?
Completely about off screen.
What were you open about?
Every time I see David, it looks like he's looking for where the buffet is. Like, he's just completely checked
David.
Out. But I love him.
David is one of my favorite contestants on this season. I'm not even kidding. I'm obsessed with David. In these group shots where there's like an argument going on, just look for David in the background. It's
he
the
doesn't
best.
Give one F. He's just out to lunch in the best way.
In the best way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was funny. Katie did address a conversation that was had that we never saw. But what I loved was that she was like, you've expressed being uncomfortable, you know, in this situation and under these circumstances, which I really relate to, and it really made his behavior add up, which is, you know, him just sort of being in the background and not really voicing an opinion very often. Right. But I do wish we had seen that conversation, just because I love David so much.
Dwayne Wade, baby.
Show us what's going on. Instead, we get lots of Thomas. So
much Thomas.
She sits down with Thomas, and she wants to get down to brass tacks. She's like, you mentioned in your meandering confession that you have a lot of red flags that I might want to know about. What are they? Like, we're in private now. Tell me. And he says, my biggest thing I wanted you to know is in getting here, I didn't ask for you. Does this mean that he's confessing that he didn't want her to be bachelorette? I didn't know any other way to read this.
This was a perfect example of him being too honest about something he did not need to be honest about. Yeah. Because as I said in our recap, you know, in the casting process, you are usually more or less cast or about to be officially cast by the time they announce who the next lead is. So he didn't need to ask for her.
Right.
Most people don't ask. No. You know, they might say, who would you like to be the bachelor or bachelorette? But it's not like that is, you know, considered when casting you.
It does just start to feel like negging. Like, he's like, I just wanted you to know. Just wanted you to know this thing that might make you feel insecure that actually doesn't matter at all. And then he follows that up by love bombing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
amazing. Thomas is one part totally inappropriate truth and nine parts BS.
Yes.
That's a heady mix.
That's the Thomas drink.
It's really working on Katie. Yeah. She's wasted on it. She's like, everything we've gone through in our lives to get to this point, I believe when two people come together in circumstances that could never possibly be obtainable and have a connection like that, it's for a reason. And Katie's like,
Thomas, you're saying so many words and none of them mean anything.
Katie's
but they don't even go
crazy.
In the right order. They're not in the right order.
No.
These circumstances could never possibly be obtainable. And Katie's like, you're dodging the question, like, just FYI. And he's like,
good for her. I'm not. Yeah. And then continues.
He's like, ask me anything. And she's like, I don't know what to ask. Just, you said there are red flags. What are they? And he continues to not answer the question. He's just like, every day I'm here, this gets realer and realer. I don't ever want a second of doubt to come into the feelings that we have and the things that I feel and I think you feel are just...
The feelings I feel and the things I think you feel.
Right.
They're different things.
Are just, I'm not going to say it's a certain word, but it's developing to something. My intention on this is that we're leaving, getting married. Ideally, where would you want to live? Because we could buy a house anywhere and figure it out.
Yeah, he's flashing the bucks right there.
I know. I was like, Thomas, are you saying you're rich? Baby?
Oh,
he's like, I may be full of shit and have nothing to say, but I can get you a nice house.
I can get you a house anywhere. Mm-hmm. If you can get me a house in Manhattan, then like, all right, I will leave my husband. Anyone's offering. And Katie is a little bowled over by this. She's like, to be determined.
And she stands.
And she stands. The time is over. And Thomas is
That's
like,
a big deal.
I fucked up.
The standing is a big deal. She was not interrupted.
Oh, you do not want to stand.
No, you don't want your lead to stand mid-conversation. No,
especially without a kiss.
Yeah, I love that none of it works on her. Like, she just saw right through it.
What's funny,
although she does kiss him later. I know that she
is kind of intoxicated by Thomas, but in this moment, she's just like, you're not answering my questions and I'm annoyed. Mm-hmm. But later he comes back and does the same shit. And she's like, oh my God, yes, we feel things for each other and they make out.
Yeah. And I mean, I get it. I'm a little intoxicated by Thomas, to be frank.
He's a good looking dude.
He said a lot of words.
I mean, it's endearing. His lack of ability to communicate is almost endearing to me.
And we've long thought that Katie and Thomas, I mean, they just have major chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I
she
think
just
we've all
wants
been
to
there.
Make out with him is the truth. And she's like, God, he's saying so many words to me. I'm so tired. Let's just like make out.
Yeah. You were kind of like this. That
he's not going to tell me his red flags.
What'd you say?
On your season, you kind of had a little
bit of that. Oh, I fully had a bit of that on my season.
Yeah. Yeah. Charlene was just like, I really, really want to make out with this guy. I don't want to hear any more of his talking.
Shh, stop talking.
And I respect
that. No, no, sweetie. Let me shushy with my mouth. Thomas is like, he knows he fucked up. He gets the message from her standing up. He's like, I gotta fix this, even if the guys all hate me. So it's Aaron is having a moment with Katie. Aaron is already suspicious of Thomas ever since his display in the group confession. And they're all kind of throwing around accusations. Like James is saying, oh, it's not believable that Thomas could pivot from the intention to build a platform to suddenly being there for love. That's too big of a shift. And Aaron is like, I just can't imagine that Katie would be Thomas's type. I felt like that was kind of a revealing thing to say.
Yeah, definitely. And you think that I bought it. I gotta say,
I believe that he thinks that. What I also believe is like, if you're looking at, I mean, Thomas and Aaron are both like handsome guys who are on The Bachelorette. Why does Aaron think that Katie could not be attractive to Thomas? Like, if a guy that I was dating was like, oh, you'd never be his type, I would be like, excuse me? I'm hot shit.
I think they're competitive. He knows that Thomas is his kind of doppelganger. In that season, and he feels competitive with him.
You think that's all it is?
I think Aaron and Thomas. If I had to say who, like it was like one of those games where you match the cards. You ever play that game when you were a kid? You know, like things
memory?
That are like each other.
Yeah.
Like I would match Aaron and Thomas. They're like a pair.
Okay, so you think he did that to sort of just like he did it that out of just
he
competition.
He knows he's competing with Thomas. That's the way I felt. If I was him, like if a guy looked exactly like me or similar to me, I would feel competitive with him too on The Bachelorette.
I'm going to a slightly darker place with this.
Wow.
And I'm not talking about looks at all. I'm just talking about personality and intelligence. But I think that Aaron is on to something. I don't know if Thomas needs or even fully recognizes what Katie is and has to offer.
Interesting. Okay. Mm. I have a more cynical view on Aaron from this.
Oh, interesting.
I don't
okay.
think he's necessarily wrong per se. I am suspicious of Thomas as well. But like, whenever a guy is like, I don't think he could be into her, I'm like, well, why don't you think she is appealing enough that he could be into her? Like, if I'm, I would want all the guys to think all the other guys are genuinely into me.
Oh, that's interesting. We both have cynical views, but in different ways.
Right. Who knows? I'm just a little skeptical of a guy who would be like, oh, I'm sure he's not into her. Like, how could he be into her? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah. I'm skeptical.
Also icky.
But in fairness, Thomas is kind of the bad guy in this scenario because Aaron finally gets time with Katie and is sharing about his father's stroke in more detail, which happened when Aaron was around 19. And Thomas just kind of wanders up and is like, can I have Katie now?
He does not wander up. He lurks for an extended amount of time in like the amount of distance that he can hear a very intimate conversation. And both Aaron and Katie are like, I'm creeped out by this. I was like, this is Thomas. I thought this was a bad move, but then it sort of worked. So I was wrong.
Yeah. Thomas is like, I need to share something with Katie. Aaron is like, okay. And Thomas sits down and says, it was put on my heart so heavy after our conversation. I had to come talk to you. Fear and love are two very similar things rooted in the same concept.
Like, did he take a course from Carl before Carl left?
He says, when I look at you, I feel both of them so strongly at the same time. I couldn't leave without letting you know how special I see you and how special feeling that fear was again. I haven't felt that way in as long as I can remember. Then the closed caption describes the sound that he makes after this as a groan. And Katie is bedazzled. She is bewitched. She loves his passion. She's so happy he's here. He's just doing the same thing as before, but it's working for her this time.
Do you think she actually bought it?
I know what's happening here. I've been here before. Like, sometimes you're so physically attracted to someone, and they may be terrible, but you can't stop it. It's a runaway train, and you're just a victim of their attractiveness. And I think Katie cannot overcome Thomas's amazing good
She's
looks.
Looking for reasons to get back on board the Thomas.
She's just like,
engine.
He has a square jaw. He seems really into me. I want to make out with him. Like, mm-hmm. Let's end this conversation and make out. That was sort of my read.
And their makeouts are
read
hot
as well.
Remember, they had the pulling on the lap makeout, which is like, that's a high level makeout.
Yeah, that is. That was a high level.
Yeah.
And this is sort of where Thomas turns among the men into like the prime villain. Like, we've been building there. I don't know if you noticed all of the like very intense villainous music cues he started to get like every time he spoke.
Yeah.
Dun, but dun, speaking dun. Of heavy-handed things, the music cues were really telling you how to feel about
in
this
case
guy.
You didn't know already.
He's very bad.
So Thomas returns to the group and the men are immediately all over him. They're like, you interrupted someone's time. Aaron says, that was super disrespectful to me. And then he says, I thought you had a specific purpose to talk to Katie. And Thomas says, I did. That purpose was to tell her how I feel about her. And Aaron says, that's what I was doing. So you're saying your time is worth more than mine. And Thomas is like, yeah. And then Aaron says, well, I was trying to respect you because I thought it was something important. And Thomas says, well, yeah, so I told Katie I was falling in love with her. Check the tape. Doesn't seem like he did tell her he was falling in love with her.
He actually said, I'm not going to say it's a certain feeling.
Yes. And that was in the previous conversation. In the conversation they're referring to.
Yes, the first conversation.
He says nothing of the kind. Yeah. And he says, well, I'm sorry, Aaron. I'm sorry. It's something you'll never understand. And the men are pretty annoyed by this. They think he's being very disrespectful to all of them. They're very nice boys and they don't deserve this.
And at that point, they think he's telling the truth.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And it's a really alarming moment is where he leans into that lie just out of convenience to avoid blame in that moment, as if that would even avoid blame.
Thomas is really stepping on the integrity of this franchise, and I won't stand for it.
I mean, I just want to also flag, like, the intensity of language that Aaron deploys when he doesn't like someone that I really noted throughout. I think he says at one point Thomas is like a sociopath.
Oh, we're getting to that later.
Oh, we're getting to that. But he says here, like, that Thomas is a cancer that he needs to be cut out. I mean,
yeah,
just a lot of very, very intense language.
Aaron
very
goes handsome, ramps very right handsome, to 11. Handsome. We should have known from the way he was with Cody, who, as best as I can tell, put some things on Instagram that he didn't like.
Are you serious? Is that what it was?
Well, later when he explained it, he was like, he posted some things on social media that really seemed malicious.
Yeah, they weren't even friends.
Aaron does not shy away from conflict. That said, I did enjoy him.
And that makes me not quite trust his judgment, because it seems like any action that frustrates him is like dealt with at the same level. And you need to be able to differentiate. You know, the punishment needs to fit the crime.
He's going to Thomas like, don't look at me, man. Just pretend we don't even know each other. You're disgusting and repulsive. But basically, Katie comes back, gives Connor B the group date rose. And then the conflict kind of continues for a little bit after she leaves for the night. And Connor B accuses Thomas of toying with Katie's emotions by saying that he was falling in love with her. And this is when Thomas says, oh, well, I didn't say I loved her. I said, you can't have fear without love. So, like, something completely different?
Like, no difference.
He literally just lies out of convenience.
Yeah.
It's like
he's
thought
digging himself a hole.
Here. Yeah, he thought saying that he told Katie that he was falling in love with her would help him in that scenario. And then later when that was used against him, then he's like, oh, no, I didn't.
Well, he's playing the game. He's trying to play the game too hard.
Thomas?
He's treating the show as a game, which it kind of is. And he's playing too hard. There's no nuance.
Yeah, I agree.
He's not savvy. He's not savvy at all.
He thinks he's savvy.
And this play doesn't even work on any level. At the end of the date, Connor B gets the rose. He doesn't even get the rose. And all the men now hate him.
Right.
So, and have like two different crimes to be able to, you know, bring up again and again against him. Meanwhile, back at the house, the men are just lounging cozily in their athleisure. And it's time for the one-on-one date, which goes to Michael. Love is an adventure. Love, Katie.
Michael really needs this date. He didn't get one at all last week. Plus, he has some big things to talk to Katie about. Fortunately, they're going to have a beautiful dune buggying date. Is that what they're doing? Through the desert brush. Katie actually, while she's practicing, flips her vehicle fully onto its top and has to be rescued. But they still let her drive the dune buggy to pick up Michael.
How badass is she? Like, that camera on her, she was like, whoops. Completely hanging upside down.
I would have been having like a panic attack. Yeah.
I would have been fully crying.
I would have been like, I'm suing you. Like, how could you put me in this position?
She was so chill.
There was a teaser. I believe there was a teaser in the previews of the season, which I hate when they do this. They showed that dune buggy, then they show an ambulance. Yeah. Like, oh, wow, someone died. Like, no, she just was having fun.
Yeah, she got a really bad bruise, though.
Yeah, she did. Her neck was a little sore, so it was kind of serious.
So Michael is prepared to talk to Katie about his late wife. And it's clear that, I mean, his wife died around 2 years before this. It's clear that she's still very present in his mind. But he's also, it seems like, genuinely into Katie and is really excited about the prospect of finding love again. So they stop for their like champagne picnic, and he tells her that, you know, he has a son at home. He would leave if he didn't see something between them, but he feels like she's really special. And then he starts to dig a little deeper, and he says, you know, I felt selfish for leaving my son, but he deserves the happiest dad. And he has this pause now to invest in himself and take another look at what his life could look like away from kind of the everyday responsibilities of being a single parent. And Katie says, well, yeah, your son is learning from you, from how you are in the world. And one of the greatest lessons in life is love. And Michael says, I hear this ends in an engagement, but actually it begins in an engagement. Katie loves this. And then they just like hardcore make out against the dune buggy. Our producer Harry points out that they're clearly wasted here. I'm just so used to people making out madly against vehicles that I like didn't even notice, but they're definitely drunk.
Well, I didn't notice either.
I didn't notice that. I was more distracted by his hand.
I just noticed that Michael had better moves. So yes. Maybe the alcohol helped, but he had
that kiss went way uphill from yeah,
that was like
two.
That was like an 8.75 kiss as compared to like a 6 at best in the first one.
We've been rating the kisses.
Michael came in with some good energy. He was like confident and just has a really nice like connection with Katie. I was much more into him than I thought like from night one than I was going to be.
Totally agree on that.
Yeah, we're all in the same boat.
We actually weren't even, if I'm honest, we weren't huge Michael fans.
No, I was actually not. I did thought I was like,
yeah, he just felt like a little too automatically into her for me, which I'm always suspicious of. But man, was I wrong. It was hard to leave this episode and not be completely obsessed with Michael.
Michael is the guy to beat.
I just want to circle back a bit to what you said, Claire, when you were quoting him on why he went on the show. And I feel like that needs attention, which is why you go on this show. The pausing and investing in yourself thing is the reason to go on this show. And I feel like people don't really talk about that enough. And I just love that he went there. And you fully believe it. I don't think Michael is trying to pivot his career using Instagram.
Michael may be the most there for the right reasons guy on this season.
As the person with the kid often is, honestly.
And I mean, he's had extreme tragedy. You know, he's trying to sort of go out of his comfort zone.
Okay, so we'll get to that.
I had, even starting here and even more so later, this brought up a lot of stuff for me. So I'm going to be like even more heartfelt than I usually am during this portion. But like my dad was widowed when he had kids who were at home, like older than Michael's son, but still needed daily care and was dating during that time. And so the way that Michael talked about this really hit a lot of like emotional pressure points for me. And I just loved the way that he was so self-possessed and thoughtful about it. And when he said that his son deserved the happiest dad, I was like, that sounds like so like self-serving, but it's so true. Like, you don't want a parent who is, you know, miserable because they think that's better for you, whose life is defined by grief. Like, it's better, it's good, it's healthy to like pursue a full and happy life and for your child to see that that's what people deserve. And that, that like touched me. Because obviously when I was a kid and my dad was dating, I was much less understanding as a very annoying 13-year-old. But I liked seeing it from this angle. And
it reminded me of when you're on a plane and they're like, put your oxygen mask on yourself before your kid.
Right.
It's like, it makes sense. The happy dad thing is real. The happy parents thing is real.
Absolutely. Very real. And the night portion of this date was obviously like very intense. I was fully weeping watching him talk to Katie. You know, they sit down and he very quickly kind of gets into his story. And he says, like, if you want to understand me and why I'm here, you need to understand my story. And he says that 16 years ago, he saw his wife, Laura, on campus. And like, he just thought, like, that's it. And they started dating right away. And they got married in 2012. They had their son in 2016. And he said life was perfect. And then 7 months after their son was born, his wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. And he's sort of choking up talking about how courageous and graceful she was as, you know, her illness progressed and their kind of like desperation to get into clinical trials and like her hair falling out because of the chemo. And it was just heartbreaking. And he says in January 2019, she passed away. She was in a room full of people that she loved. And on that day, I was happy she wasn't in pain anymore. And that was just like, I'm like tearing up even just reading his words back. And then he says what I thought was like the most beautiful part of the episode. He's like, you know, I've taken time and I'm in a place where I'm ready to kind of like open up and explore love again. He says, quote, what a gift to be able to fall in love twice. I'm like literally tearing up. I just thought that was so beautiful. Like, what a lovely observation and way to frame it as like in a way that didn't at all downplay, you know, the importance and the significance of his love with his wife, and also didn't close him off to having, you know, a new relationship that could be different and beautiful in its own way.
So agree. We're on the same page there.
Nothing to add there. It was,
yeah, I mean, it also
wasn't a dry eye in the room.
He also makes it more desirable for Katie to be involved with him. You know, like, she obviously is always going to think like, oh, my second best to your
yeah, your love that she went there. I know we're skipping ahead a bit, but when she said, you know, it would be a lot of people in this position,
yeah,
or in her position,
jealous of someone who's not even around anymore. Yeah. And he's basically saying, you can be another best.
Yeah.
You don't have to be better than my wife.
He said it's,
you could just be another best.
He said, well, it would be my job to make sure that what we share is unique and our own. Mm-hmm. And I have no doubt we could do that. By the way, that was off the top of my head. I've spent a lot of time on this episode, clearly. But yeah, there was a really beautiful, tragic, but beautiful moment. In her ITM after, I felt like Katie's emotions just perfectly mirrored what we were all feeling at home, where she said, I'm so sad for his tragedy, for how sad his story is, but I'm also weeping because it's so beautiful what he said, and I'm just the possibilities there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something different about how this plays out, I think, than a lot of the single parent conversations on this show. I think because Michael is so well spoken and thoughtful about this, but also because Katie is so, I think, sort of wise and has so much perspective on this. Like, she's not here for a fairy tale. Like, she's not obsessed with, you know, the things that I certainly was obsessed with when I started my dating life. Like, you know, I want to be the ultimate dream woman for my partner. I don't want him to have ever loved anyone as much as me. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how I will find value. And Katie has a much more, like, I think, mature approach toward building a family and a life with a partner that really shone through here. And I actually really could see them together at the end of this. I don't know if they'll end up together, but I do feel like they both see that, like, maturity and that readiness to have just, like, a real, not fairy tale, just, like, happy family together that is built in the everyday ways that you build a family.
Andy's 100% convinced now that Michael is winning.
I would love that. I think they'd be very sweet together.
Yeah, I agree. But I told him that it shows his greenness with the franchise.
Yeah, I was like, that's a nice thought, Andy. Aww. I don't think so. But I would love to see it.
Yeah, and this really, it just hit on a lot for me, including, like, just triggering some of the really immature feelings I had when I was a kid. And I was like, if you fall in love again, did you ever really love my mom? You know, just, like, really just, like, childish things. And it's so profound to me to, like, reprocess that as an adult. And I do that, like, all the time. I think about it all the time. But to see them processing it and so eloquently, I loved, and to see him talking about something that my dad really proved to me, which is that if you really love your spouse very deeply and have a good marriage, then it's a great tribute in a way to want that again with someone else and to be able to build that again. And I see that with my dad and my stepmom, and Now I'm crying. Oh God,
I'm we're crying. Gonna move on.
That is so beautiful. It is mm-hmm. a tribute.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
was so wonderful that you want to find that again.
Yeah, and
not
so
replace
then
it. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Sorry,
that was. It's sorry, so easy I'm to fully give crying. Up. It's so. It's so easy to give up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really. Yeah. Exactly. Not replace, but find it again. And so. Back at the house, meanwhile, there's some very immature behavior happening.
We really pivot from like the most emotionally mature, beautiful connection to just like Thomas word salad and a lot of very aggro emotions.
Yeah, there's a full like campaign being waged both against Thomas and perhaps by Thomas for Thomas. For the soul of the house.
Thomas has endorsed Thomas.
giving Thomas his vote. And Hunter tries to handle this by pulling Thomas aside and just trying to convince him to change his behavior. He says, you know, your integrity is being called into question in the house. If you have this I don't give a fuck attitude about the guys, it's going to backfire. Like, you need to kind of make this right. And Thomas says, well, I can't even think about all that because my love with Katie could be sky high. And I just want to like soar with the eagle. He's like, that's all that matters, basically. And Hunter says, well, you know, I super don't care about that. That's great if you're in love, whatever. Just like, please don't ruin another rose ceremony. And Thomas is like, whatever, man. Sure. I don't care. So this doesn't seem to be a successful gambit, but Hunter is like, I did what I could. Meanwhile, Aaron is out there being like, Thomas is hugely sociopathic. He's genuinely just a manipulative psychopath. It's annoying.
I, too, find dangerous sociopaths to be somewhat annoying.
Yeah. That's how you know you've got a huge sociopath on your hands.
You're just like really
Jeffrey
like,
Dahmer. Jeffrey Dahmer. Super annoying.
Yeah, just annoying.
Yeah. It's like oh God. Stop it, guy. Jeffrey. It's so annoying.
And meanwhile, the men are comparing notes and they're like, Thomas told some of us that he did tell Katie he was falling in love with her. Other people, he says he didn't say that. Some of us, he told both things. They're all getting pretty riled up about this. And when they all assemble in the common area, presumably for a day card reading or one of these common area situations where they all stand facing the camera or sit, Hunter decides to address it publicly. He says, Thomas, I've been hearing from people that you're telling them a different story than you told last night. There's flip-flopping. You're smiling like a suspicious amount and it makes us feel bad. It doesn't feel genuine. And I think you want to be bachelor. And Thomas says, well, I would never do anything to hurt you, Hunter. And I'm so sad if it came across that way. And Hunter says, well, that's the problem. You know how to have conversations and come across well. And I feel manipulated. I'm worried that you're doing that with Katie and hiding your desire to be bachelor behind a smokescreen of nice words that make her feel good. Have you ever thought about being bachelor? Ever? And Thomas says, thank you for coming to me directly. I don't have the right answer for you right now. You know, one of my issues is I always felt I had to smile and say the right thing, and that's not who I was.
He sounds like an answering machine, like some sort of service where you're like, press two, and you say like, you're like yelling like, no, pay the bill. And they're like, ah.
Thank you for coming to me directly about your bill problem.
Oh, you want our logistics department.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Like, he like asks a very direct question and Thomas is like, I do not have the answer to that right now. And then for some reason, instead of even just like committing to the obfuscation, he like, he's like, actually, yeah, I did think about being the bachelor.
He says,
I'm going to go with honesty.
He says, quote, I'm not going to be disingenuous to you guys. Coming in, being a bachelor was a thought on my mind. Disingenuous is just an original bachelorism. I think it was minted on The Bachelor, and it continues to circulate there.
Conversating and disingenuous.
Disingenuous might even be more
I think conversating might actually be a word.
I think it is a word.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, it shouldn't be.
I actually learned that it was a word from watching Bachelor in Paradise.
It's a great place to
learn. I thought
learn.
It was converse. They're
learn
both
about
words.
The English language.
Well, yeah. It certainly can be converse. You can say conversing.
They're both.
Oh, yeah,
I guess you can also say
they're both.
You know, she's saying they're both words.
If you want to just throw in an extra syllable, if you're like a utilize right. instead of use person.
Yes. Totally.
Yes.
Yeah, that's Thomas right there.
It is.
Mm-hmm. So Thomas is like, that's gone now. I no longer think about being bachelor. No one believes him. Trey is like, listen, you don't just say that. I can't believe he said it.
You just think it. You just think it all
like
the time.
All of us.
Yeah. I want to see, I want whoever is the bachelor for next season, which I know it's probably not going to be Thomas now. I want them to take a lie detector test. To,
yeah.
Did you go on that season
ever
thinking
about
being the bachelor?
Did it, yeah. Not even did you go in with that express goal, but did it ever cross your mind that that yeah. might be a possibility? I was like, Hunter, you're really like,
yeah.
you're really creating, you know, a criminal tribunal over like a very small offense.
It's thought
here.
Crimes like, is what we're working with.
It's
here.
Thought yeah. crime. That's what I literally thought that to myself. I was like, oh my God.
Thinking yeah. about I thought mean, between, crimes is also a thought crime. I'm sorry.
I know. I'm, we're living in 1980.
They're between him and Mike, the virgin. I think they're creating like a fascist state on The Bachelorette. Like you have to really, I it's true.
Creating, like that's what it is.
Yeah, The yeah. Bachelor is a fascist state, Andy. Oh. Welcome.
Sorry.
The rules are absolute and they're always changing. One person is in charge and their word is final. It's
wow, you're right.
kind of terrifying.
1984.
But I mean, the crazy thing is that the best way to prove that he's being genuine about being into Katie and not wanting to go on as Bachelor is to publicly say that he wants to be Bachelor, because you gotta know that that completely for all time blows up your chances of being the Bachelor.
Yes,
that's true.
Yeah. He made
the
that
one
big
rule
focus.
About the one rule about Bachelor is don't talk about being Bachelor.
Yeah, it's just like it's Fight Club.
Mm-hmm. Identical.
This show is like Fight Club in more ways than one, but that's one of the most important ones.
You mean the commentary on end stage capitalism and postmodernism?
We don't have any more time in this episode, but
this is where we end.
Yeah, any actually. Final thoughts, Charlene, Andy, before we say goodbye?
Well, what's interesting about Thomas saying I did think about becoming the Bachelor, I was really trying to find a way for this to be Frankenbitten and taken out of context. And while I do think it might have been, the yes is when we see someone else. So the yes is Frankenbitten or a voiceover, and then it cuts to his face. Mm-hmm. I think it's possible he said it in a longer explanation of his expectations coming in, and it was just sort of singled out and put with a yes in front of it. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, at the end of the day, we saw it coming out of his mouth. It's just, it's such a faux pas. Again, it's the unnecessary truth.
Mm.
Like, why? You should be bullshitting about this, mm-hmm. not all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he can't get
really
out of his own way. He really has.
Yeah, he's got it flipped.
Yeah.
He bullshits about the things that shouldn't be bullshitted about. And
yes.
Should be bullshitting when he's telling the truth.
It's true.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And despite Aaron saying, oh, well, he's smarter than Carl about this. He's a really, really good, subtle villain. I disagree. I think he's playing this super badly. And it's only a matter of time for him, in my mind, at this point. And on that note, I think we got to wrap things up.
Thank you guys for joining us. This has been a delight.
Oh, it's been
Thank
a pleasure.
You. Yeah, always Very our fun. Pleasure.
Yes.
Now it's time for Love to See It, Hate to See It, where we pick one moment we actually loved and one we hated from this week's episode and rate them from 1 to 5. 5 means we really, genuinely, powerfully loved or hated this moment, and 1 means, we had a feeling, so let's do this.
Yeah, I'm going to start us off with love. A bachelor union, a short-lived but beautiful display of bachelor solidarity. It wasn't like a true union in many senses, including that it was actually formed to protect their boss. But I still loved seeing them come together, and so I am going to give that a 3.5.
And for me, it's weird to say I love this. That's perhaps not the right language, but it was very cool to see open and honest conversations about difficult things like sexual assault and like grief and consent. So I guess I do love to see those open and honest and vulnerable and sensitive conversations being had on a show like The Bachelorette. So I'm going to give that a 4. Also, honorable mention for me, just men crying. I love seeing men cry. It's just like a thing for me. So we got lots of good man tears. Wow. Yeah.
Same. Next, hate to see it. I'm going to go with everyone falling right back into the stupid wrong reasons hunt almost immediately after Carl leaves. It reminds me, if you watch The Circle on Netflix, of the hunt for catfish within The Social Network. It really doesn't matter if they're there or whether you find them. As long as the feelings are real, it doesn't matter if someone came on for, quote unquote, the wrong reasons. It's a distraction. It just creates drama. But I do love drama, so I'm going to give it a 2.
And I want to call out Carl just really trying to prove his manliness by wildly punching the air. I mean, Andy did say he had good form, so I'll give him that. But I'm just going to say masculinity is very broken. So I'm going to give that one a 3.
And this week we're going to try something new. We want to start rating these episodes overall on a scale of 1 to 10. And in honor of Katie's sex positivity, we're going to rate this season episode by episode on a scale of how sex positive that week's episode was. What do you think, Emma?
I feel like this one is actually pretty high up there. A 7, maybe even an 8. Like, Katie really made a powerful and direct case for the value of communication, openness around sex, while talking about her past sexual assault. I thought that conversation was incredibly impactful. And I think it took sex positivity from this sort of like catchphrase buzzwordy thing into the realm of like understanding why something like being open and honest about sex without shame is so important and can literally contribute to safety.
Yeah, it both was sex positive and actively made the case for why it matters on a deep and profound level. So I agree. I think that's a 7.58 for me.
And that's it for Love to See It with Emma and Claire. Thanks to our wonderful guests, Charlene Joint and Andy Levine. Of course, remember to follow them on social and check out their amazing podcast, Dear Shandy, and their Instagram account at Dear Shandy.
Love to See It is produced by us, Claire Fallon and Emma Gray, and Stitcher. This episode was edited by Sarah Patterson.
Our theme music is by Tamar Haviv, and our art is by Celine Chang. Josephine Martirana is our executive producer.
If you like the show, please, please, please help us out. Rate us 5 stars and leave a review. It really helps new people come to the show.
And if you want to get in touch, you can always email us at clareandemmapod@gmail.com and find us on Twitter at @LoveToSeeItPod and Instagram at @ClareandEmmaPod. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at @EmmaLadyRose.
And I'm at Claire E. Fallon. We'll be back next week for week 4 of Katie's Journey. Can you keep up?
Stitcher.